ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
It is a truth universally acknowledged that on one's 250th birthday, there should be a celebration. I'm Claire Nichols, and on The Book Show, we're raising our teacups to Jane Austen.
Why Austen? What is it about her?
Authors Colm Tobin, Karen Joy Fowler, and more will explore why, in 2025, the Austen effect is bigger than ever.
That's quite incredible.
Search for The Book Show and look for Dear Jane wherever you get your podcasts, or hear it now on the ABC Listen app.
This is ABC Radio National's Big Ideas, bringing you big thinkers at the best live events. I'm Natasha Mitchell. It is so great to have your company. Why are a growing number of young Australians sick of being patronised by politicians, and what can be done about it? That's today on the show.
The inherent values of my generation offer a ticket out of the current political culture we are stuck in. Talk to us. Tell us why a bill isn't progressing. Tell us about the deliberation and debate you just had inside the party room. Tell us why you disagreed with someone you were on the same side as. Stop treating us like the kids who can't handle the scary part of the movie. We've probably already seen it on TikTok anyway, and we're watching it too. If you don't give us nuance, political nuance, we will come back to you with binaries. We are capable of complexity. We don't want politicians to be influencers. We are yearning for the return of transparent civic leaders.
Listen up, politicians and media organisations. 33-year-old Holly Rankin has some words for you about the health of our democracy in this final sitting week of Australia's federal parliament for 2025, Holly was invited by the Speaker of the House of Representatives, no less, Milton Dick, to deliver the fifth annual Speaker's Lecture at Parliament House in Canberra. As a singer-songwriter and music producer, Holly is also known as Jack River. She's worked as a strategic advisor for the Uluru Dialogues, the Australian Recording Industry Association, or ARIA, and independent ACT Senator David Pocock. Now she runs her own company, using cultural and digital platforms to influence social and political change. And today on Big Ideas, she's addressing a room full of politicians and parliamentary staff, and you. So here's Holly with her speech. Before the fall, can civic institutions engage a new generation in time to save democracy?
As a kid, I was strangely interested in how things could change. It started with my love for animals, specifically Siberian tigers. When I learnt of their potential extinction due to deforestation, I was rightly disappointed and enraged and began investigating how I could help change it. I learnt that the law was the function that might most affect change. Laws were made by governments, and in a democracy like mine, governments were elected by and for the people. Mum and Dad always encouraged us kids to write. I found my MP, Bob Baulbin, Liberal MP of Paterson's, email address and began a years-long back and forth about his job, his values, and asking questions like, what are we doing about yellow bins, plastic in the sea? How was Parliament faring that week as a sweet nine-year-old? If I only had access to my old Hotmail account, deltatotallyrules@hotmail.com, maybe I would know what exactly I had written to Bob Baulbin, who is still with us today and lives in Gloucester. I thought it was completely normal to email the local MP and have a chat at that age of 10, and I still think that it is today. That simple correspondence of a kid and her MP made me believe politics could be a two-way conversation. When I was 14, I lost my sister Shannon in a freak accident. Her death was followed by a three-year coronial inquest and a six-year-long court case. The pain and the harrow of grief, the turmoil of seeing my parents lose a child, made me want to escape my life. So I created Jack River, and I built a world of song to heal myself. What followed was a community that I could never ever have dreamt of when I first took those steps of writing my life into song. Writing songs in my bedroom turned into playing to 80,000 young people in the Domain for the School Strikes for Climate. and 8,000 people at Splendor in the Grass singing my songs. It turned into thousands of relationships with strangers all around the country. Through watching others build their communities too, from heavy metal bands like the Amity Affliction to rappers like Briggs and pop artists like Thelma Plum, I've been a student to the art of bringing people together. Across my decade in music, I wanted to bring storytelling and culture to great political ideas and help storytellers themselves understand their own politics and be supported to lean in. But when I worked on the Voice to Parliament campaign alongside Megan Davis and Auntie Pat Anderson from 21 to 2023, I saw the potential of people and organisations, specifically organisations, to weaponise culture, storytelling, algorithms and lies to tear us apart. It was during that campaign that I realised that the relationship between culture and politics would come to define the time that I was living in. That realisation has shaped the work that I do now, developing programs and pathways for the public to re-engage in civic conversations. We're living through a great generational transfer of trust. Young Australians have shifted their faith from institutions to individuals, from mastheads to personalities, from politicians to podcasts. This isn't because we are shallow or uninformed. It's because we've watched institutions fail to deal with the current political reality and fail to engage with us as they go. I stand here today as the mother of a daughter, a three-year-old daughter, Magnolia, who will grow up in a burning world. If she has children, my grandchildren, they will see the sinking of New York, the Tiwi Islands and London, and most of Papua New Guinea. At just 33, I have already lived through climate-fueled fires on the south coast, floods on the north coast, a world-stopping pandemic, multiple genocides and multiple wars. There are only 29 liberal democracies left in the world, and 72% of the global population, 5.8 billion people, live under autocratic regimes. It seems as if horrors are unfolding everywhere we look, and our leaders are either helpless or hamstrung, and in so many cases, making decisions that only fan the flames. Whilst I very much acknowledge every generation has lived through multiple crises, there is one challenge particularly unique to us. And that is the new public square. This new public square, an online space where an entire generation gets their information, is owned by six companies controlled by the world's richest men. This is a problem we haven't faced since the dawn of democracy itself. While the checks and balances designed to distribute power and money throughout society haven't yet completely broken, they are failing fast. Around the world and increasingly here at home, it's hard. It's very hard not to feel like democracy is perched on a cliff. With this in mind, today I'm going to explore the question, can Australia's civic institutions engage a new generation in time to save democracy? I'll explore this in three parts. Number one, engagement. How and why are politics and the media in an engagement crisis? Who are young Australians engaged with and why? Number two, trust. Does true engagement rely on trust? Why has it been lost and how can we rebuild it? And three, the new public square. Who owns the new public square? And are engagement and trust less important than returning control of the public square to the people? And what does that relationship look like? So let's get in. Okay. Everyone here knows we live online. Half of the Australian electorate is now under 40. The majority of us consume everything, politics, news and entertainment, through a little screen we hold in our hands. The numbers tell us a story. 74% of 18 to 24-year-olds use social media for news, and nearly half of them rely on it as their main source of news. Consumption of podcasts, new media, and creator-led content has skyrocketed. Young Australians are now more likely than any other age group to see celebrities and influencers as news sources. But young Australians aren't disengaged from civic conversation. They're just having it somewhere else. Think of the way they're doing this like you might a traditional newspaper. At the front of the paper, news organisations like Schwartz and the Daily Oz are delivering fact-checked news held accountable to journalistic standards. Common Ground are delivering news and stories on First Nations policy and people. And outlets like Women's Agenda are delivering political news for women. Then as you flicker through the paper, you have vibrant commentary in the New Look opinion columns and commentary sections. You've got Punters Politics, the Batuta Advocate, Z Feed, Hannah Ferguson of Cheek Media, and Quillette. They're breaking down policy or memeifying political moments into contexts that their audiences can quickly place. Independent journalists are tapping away on Substack and delivering opinion direct to inboxes. Ex-journalists or current journalists are starting media platforms to critique the integrity of news for a new generation, like Et by Jan Fran and Antoinette Latouf. Young people are coordinating national climate action via instant messaging groups and Discord. First Nations women like Marley Silver and organisations like Clothing the Gaps are building movements through fashion and sport, gathering people online and poising them for real-world impact. Young Australians are creating their own public square. And as the public moved online, civic institutions tried to catch up, but mostly they've just tried to campaign. Political strategists now say, win digital and you win the day. During the Voice to Parliament referendum, the No campaign accrued 2 million TikTok likes, while the Yes campaign had just 200,000. In the US election, the Trump campaign leveraged long-form podcasts with Joe Rogan and Theo Von, while the Harris campaign engaged hundreds of influencers but fell short in their cultural conversion. Here in Australia at the 2025 election, the ALP briefed influencers on key policies, and the Prime Minister even dropped Delulu, Gen Z slang, in Parliament. But this rush to engage comes as trust in politicians and media is collapsing rapidly. According to the World Value Survey, 88% of Australians have little or no trust in political parties. I think that's worth repeating. 88% of Australians have little or no trust in political parties, and 49% of them have little or no trust in traditional media. If politicians and media don't quickly engage meaningfully in the spaces where the next generation lives, they'll have no chance at recovering trust. This is dangerous for our democracy. So what's going on with us young ones? Why have we ditched politicians for influencers? 4 points here. Number one, in our lifetime, major institutions have crumbled before us. The Catholic Church, the efficacy of international law, the credibility of the media, our trust in our major allies, just to name a few. Number two, our attention, our bodies, and our social lives have been commodified. We've had thousands of companies tracking where our thumbs move, up or down, left or right. We've had our friendship list shared, our periods tracked, and our femininity and masculinity monetized. Number three, the line between politics and our real lives have blurred. Online, the boundaries between news, entertainment, and emotion have collapsed. Reality, opinion, and performance are now neighbours in the same scroll. And four, we were trained from a young age to think globally. I think about this quite a lot. With that thinking came a sense of global empathy and a sense of global responsibility. We were trained to think and feel across borders, and that is exactly what we're doing right now. I don't know if anyone remembers geography, but writing the word globalisation in an essay 10 times got you an A+. That's why we're here. We're a generation overwhelmed with information. We've lost trust in institutions, and in a burning world, we are running toward what makes us feel human again. We turn to real people, online influencers, because we crave consistency, transparency, and community in a world that constantly sells to us and constantly sells us out. This reflects a fundamental shift in the way we relate to power. We've moved from institutional legitimacy to relational credibility. I really don't think this is a negative shift. I honestly see it as quite exciting. This data and our intuitions tell us that young people are motivated by connection and accountability. These values are positive precursors for a reset on democracy. This shows us that the public square might be reforming down in the village where politics, life, and reality are being thrown into the cauldron together again. And I think that only good things can come of this. So, what does this mean for political engagement? Ultimately, young Australians can spot spin in milliseconds. They don't want to be sold to, and they want to know who you are. And there's so much evidence of this. Earlier in the year, when Her Excellency the Governor General was swearing in the Minister for Communications, Annika Wells, in Government House, her twin boys were kicking a football down the halls, laughing and visible to the cameras. As the camera panned around, someone asked the boys to move down the hall and shush. But instead, the Governor General paused the ceremony and asked the boys to come in and watch their mother be sworn in as a minister. This act of humanity broke the spell of keeping children and families out of rooms of authority. It reverberated around the nation as mothers everywhere saw themselves in that moment and saw a crack in the system where the light came through. In a very different moment, the most memeified moment in political history, we saw Barnaby Joyce passed out on the street in Canberra after a big night out. We've all been there. Well, some of us. We can't deny it. We bloody love to see it. Maybe it wasn't Barnaby's finest moment as a politician, but it was human. Humanity travels fast in a world that has become void of it. There's no denying that politicians who turn up as themselves, whoever they are loved by the Australian people. And after spending time in this building now, I know there is much humanity in here. I've witnessed the integrity of relationships across party lines, the friendships and consultation that happens behind the scenes. The public doesn't see the hours of policy work, the travel, the time away from home, and the profoundly human toll it takes to lead the country's political conversations. Young Australians want to see humanity in their leaders. They want to see politicians speak like real people, acknowledge mistakes, explain their thinking, and admit uncertainty. They want to see the work, not just the spin. Let me be clear. The public hasn't lost trust in politicians because they can't nail a TikTok dance. They're losing trust in politics because they can't see it working for them. You don't have to look very far for examples of how badly things are going sideways. Australian nurses are paying more tax than the largest corporations in the country, companies we all know, like my phone provider Optus and Santos. One in five permanent teachers is considering quitting within their first 5 years. The richest 1% of Australians own between 15 and 25% of all financial wealth. The median annual wage in Australia is $88,400, but to buy a house in Sydney, you'll need to be earning over $290,000. That's even scarier at the moment when uni grads don't know what jobs they'll even be able to take as big corporates slash thousands of jobs now being done by AI. The people on the front lines of our public system, where the public feels our system, the nurses, the reception staff in hospitals, doctors, teachers, and volunteers are bearing the brunt of our systemic failures. Every day they have to apologise to Australians for a system that is letting them down. A lack of humanity at the top of the chain is killing its people on the ground. Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander communities experience the failure of our systems more acutely than anyone in our society. Health standards are sliding backwards. We still have the highest incarceration rates of First Nations people in the world. We have no national commitment to telling the truth and no national mechanism for First Nations voices to be consulted and heard. We still have no national treaty, but incredible efforts are being made with the Europe Commission in Victoria, where community and government are coming together to move toward treaty, truth-telling and structural reformation between our two worlds.
Telling a room full of politicians exactly what she thinks, how satisfying would that be? 33-year-old musician and strategist Holly Rankin, aka Jack River, that's her performance name, delivering the annual Speaker's Lecture at Parliament House, which we're bringing you on ABC Radio National's Big Ideas with me, Natasha Mitchell. From the media to the civic square, why are young people feeling disillusioned with our democracy and what needs to happen to change that?
I felt the personal effects of our failing system this year when Taree, a town 15 minutes from where I live in Foster, was hit with devastating floods. Taree, Wingham, Crokey and Oxley Island were ravaged by the running waters. Over 10,000 homes were lost in our area and hundreds of farms. Of those homes that were lost, 50% were uninsured because of the flood that had passed 3 years ago, driving premiums through the roof. Premiums up to $30,000. People I grew up with, amazing workers in that community, just cannot afford. Shirley, a 73-year-old retired nurse from Wingham, thought her house, a building on stilts that had stood strong for 100 years, would be safe. but 6 metre walls of water saw it destroyed, along with all of her belongings and her beloved chickens. She couldn't afford insurance thanks to the previous once-in-a-century flood that had swept through just 3 years prior. For the first 2 months of the response and recovery, all she had to access was $1,000 in immediate government support. I watched Shirley, a woman who had worked as a nurse in a local hospital her entire life, be abandoned by our system when she needed it most. When I looked around at who turned up, as I waited for more than a FIFO visit from our politicians, with due respect, it was the SES and RFS volunteers from all around Australia and local community members who turned up in droves to help my community. When my friend, Warramai woman Tanika Perry, and Uncle Will Paulson, and a pack of local women and I made a call out for volunteers to join in the cleanup, we had 1,200 people respond in 6 days. Australians turn up when the call goes out, but our governments are increasingly too slow to hit the mark. No wonder young people are losing trust. That trust is further eroded when we see governments actively making laws that weaken the integrity of our democracy. When debate and deliberation is kept private from the public and locked in party rooms, we feel disconnected from our democracy. When party politics rewards moral concession over civic ambition, we lose hope. When policies like the Electoral Reform Bill amend our voting system to limit the ability of independents to run against major parties and put forward proposals to limit freedom of information laws, we wonder whether we are on the same page about our country's own democratic principles. When lies in political advertising remain legal and defended, even in the face of generative AI that can fabricate our reality, our integrity and time as voters feels disrespected. Disconnect, scepticism, concern, doubt, and fatigue. This is the vibe amongst young Australians right now in the systems politicians have been entrusted with running. But there is good news. There is always good news. I know trust can be won back, policy by policy, act of humanity by act of humanity. But to get there, politics must become a two-way conversation again. Who better to ask than First Nations people? We live in a country with a 65,000-year-old continuous culture encompassing over 350 language groups. Just to be clear and help us remember, First Nations people were here on this land, yarning, travelling, caring for each other and for country 63,000 years before our friend Jesus Christ was born. 63,000 years. As my friends Megan Davis and Rulla Kelly Mansell told me this week, the longevity of First Nations culture can be traced back to simply talking to each other over and over and over and over again. Younger Australians are leading a new kind of political two-way conversation. Common Threads, led by Larissa Baldwin Roberts, is holding conversations with almost every Aboriginal nation in the country on climate and energy as we speak. Youth Decide, an organisation that provides civic education to young people, are bringing life back to civics through quizzes and games in schools. Surfers for Climate creates ways for surfers to learn about climate change and the energy transition. Hilma's Network, led by Charlotte Mortlock, is creating pathways for women to join and shape the future Liberal Party. Through my company's work and my team's work at Sentiment, we're creating pathways and programs for creators and culture shapers to connect with policy, ensuring that the next generation of civic communicators have the tools they need to engage in an informed way, whatever their political persuasion, background, or belief. I think that the inherent values of my generation offer a ticket out of the current political culture we are stuck in. We're no longer asking you to have all the answers. You're holding the keys to our home and we're just asking for you to let us in. Talk to us. Tell us why a bill isn't progressing. Tell us about the deliberation and debate you just had inside the party room. Tell us why you disagreed with someone you were on the same side as. Stop treating us like the kids who can't handle the scary part of the movie. We've probably already seen it on TikTok anyway, and we're watching it too. If you don't give us nuance, political nuance, we will come back to you with binaries. We are capable of complexity. We don't want politicians to be influencers. We are yearning for the return of transparent civic leaders. It's an art form to engage online, and it's a challenge to change the way you communicate. Parliamentarians, our whole parliament, should be supported and funded to do this well. Trust in the media. Trust in traditional media is in steep decline too, as we know. Journalism and fact have become impossible to spot amongst opinion, spin, and entertainment. Our personal stories have turned into ad funding clickbait. Our front pages have become billboards for corporate political interest. Perhaps the biggest loss in trust comes from a failure to reflect the real world in real time. Audiences can now see the story in 3D and through the eyes of the people on the ground. This is no more evident than in traditional media's coverage of Israel's genocide in Gaza. On social platforms, and I say this as a mother who has laid in bed watching these videos next to my 2.5-year-old child who's grown up over this time. On social platforms, we see dead and dying children having their arms sawed off by young doctors with no anaesthetic. We have read about pregnant mothers being shot and young female doctors delivering their babies. Australian and international traditional media broadly have failed to report on human reality, despite all of us seeing it for ourselves. It's no wonder we're turning to online media and creators. We need to see reality reflected back to us, or we risk feeling like we're not connected to reality at all. Understandably, traditional media has had an allergic reaction to the migration of audiences toward creators, podcasts, and influencers. Especially this year when the Albanese government decided to let creators and influencers into the budget lockup. Let me entertain you with a quote from one of AFR's pieces about this time. Faced with a budget that no one really wanted to be at, Labor's media spinners turned to self-obsessed and self-promoting Gen Z and millennial influencers. Genius, really. They're far less likely to be the ones to call out charm as playing funny with the numbers, and they'll regurgitate the government's messages directly into the phone screens of hundreds of thousands of people. Feel old yet? Sorry, guys. Who wrote that? It's a democracy. Mocking a new generation of civic communicators and commentators, whatever their background, whatever their political literacy or their job, and assuming that they are marketing tools, is undemocratic, elitist, and frankly, quite uninformed. What I hear in this quote is frustration with the entanglement of journalism, commentary, and entertainment. Ironically, these are the same frustrations that younger audiences have had with traditional media. I understand the concern around the safeguarding of journalism and dedicated spaces for journalism, and I truly do share it wholeheartedly. I have less sympathy for the gatekeeping of who gets to talk about politics and who is welcomed into Parliament House to receive critical public information that belongs to the people themselves. Understandably, there should be concern that audiences will not be able to delineate opinion from journalism, satire from fact, and that critical information might be diluted if the reporting source is not informed. Again, many Australians have had the same material concerns about traditional media for decades now. Until journalistic standards and codes of ethics are re-established and committed to, these points are moot. The majority of creators and influencers don't want to be journalists. Some do, but rather they're interested in political commentary and opinion for the benefit of their own communities. I think we've failed as a nation to retain integrity in and efficacy of our common civic terms and the frameworks that uphold them. What is media? What is news? What is journalism? What's opinion and what is commentary? We've diluted the concept of media to the point that we can no longer defend it and protect it. When you dilute journalism enough that it can be classed as commentary, you begin to erode the logic of freedom of information requests and dedicated spaces like the budget lockup. We start to forget the reason that there should be differentiation in the first place. The media was never meant to sit on a hill and laugh at the public who dared to walk up that hill. It was meant to be a mirror to our social reality, and I know that it can be again. We must find ways to safeguard journalism and engage a new generation in its impact and its worth. There should be spaces like the budget safeguarded for media who uphold an agreed set of ethics. They could come together, these two worlds, to decide on common terms, to build a new framework for the future of political commentary where journalism is protected and valued. We could build a new media landscape, well, a media landscape, let's take out the word new, where the best parts of traditional media are amplified by creators and where true houses of journalism are appreciated by the best civic communicators. And on to the public square, the darkest chapter in this speech. The public square was once a physical space. Town halls and street corners where debates and conversations rang out in the streets, where newspapers had bylines and credits. It existed in public territory and its ownership and control were visible to those who cared to look. But for younger audiences, the public square now exists almost entirely online. It is invisible and dark. There are no bylines, no stands, no regulations, no names on the door of a shop or a product, just shadows ringing flashes in front of our eyes. The new public square, most frighteningly, is privately owned and privately governed. Six companies, Meta, Google, TikTok, X, YouTube, and OpenAI, control almost every inch of the landscape of our public square. These companies are worth a combined US $6.5 trillion, an unprecedented amount of wealth built on the infrastructure of attention. Democratic states no longer govern the informational territory within their own borders. The result is concentrated, unaccountable power and influence over our civic reality. Their endgames are corporate, not civic. Their accountability lies with shareholders, not citizens. And as it stands, governments have little jurisdiction to subpoena or audit these systems. Where the town hall once gathered people into one conversation, algorithms scatter us into thousands of bubbles, pushing and prodding us into attentional addiction. Each citizen lives inside their own personal poker machine, an individually engineered echo chamber that plays on our fears, our hopes, and our insecurities. Algorithms are engineered to drive polarization because, you guessed it, polarization drives engagement, and engagement drives profit. Every new culture war, every election, and every global catastrophe is another line in the profit sheets of Meta, OpenAI, Microsoft, X, TikTok, and YouTube. When the architecture of our public square rewards polarization, when outrage travels faster than understanding and misinformation performs better than truth, any politician or civic leader trying to drive unity is working against the rules of the square itself. In case I'm not making myself clear, all of this is an existential threat to democracy. When people can't choose what information they receive, the concept of an informed public dies. When the public square is privately owned, it doesn't sound so public anymore. We need governments to understand this threat and create bold solutions faster than we can say Scott Farquhar. Didn't land as well as I thought. But speaking of our good friend Scott, who I do respect, today the Albanese government did make a decision in the favour of people, of the Australian people. Today, the Attorney General, Michelle Rowland, said that the government will not support a text and data mining exception in the Copyright Act. This is something that myself and people from media industries and creative industries have fought for months and years now. Today, the government said that these companies have to pay to use the content that trains their system. It means that these companies will pay for Australian content and creativity in Australian law. It is a huge win for the Australian people and for the future of humanity in the time of big tech. Thank you, and I truly do thank the Attorney General and the government for understanding the risk here and making the right decision. I know I can sound like some kind of apocalypse witch at times, but I really genuinely feel hope. We have the most beautiful country. First Nations and Torres Strait Islander culture sings and dances its stories of old ways. Our stadiums and streets are alive with Australian spirit. I really do believe our politics can sing again too. It just has to become about people again. So what do bridges look like? We could embark on a great Australian conversation. We could bring civic discussion to the people, on the ground and online, regions and cities. Politics could talk to people again. We could regulate the algorithm. This is a complex issue that the whole world is grappling with. We don't yet have the answers, but we have to figure it out. We could engage in a national civics education drive that gives Australians the tools to understand and participate in their democracy. And I hear the Speaker has incredible plans for this in the future. We could create new codes and frameworks to maintain integrity in our media and protect the future of journalism. We could equip parliamentarians with the funding, the training, and the support to engage in digital spaces in the way that my generation desperately needs them to. We could rebuild trust by creating fairer systems, properly taxing those who profit from our country and our land. We could increase nurses' and teachers' pay significantly. We could fund our hospitals properly, figure out how to make our housing more affordable, and take the threat of climate change seriously. I know that we can build bridges because I know the people who will build them. Young Australians are ready to engage in democracy. They're building civic communities with or without institutional support. They value transparency, accountability, humanity, and truth, the same values that birthed democracy itself. The question is not whether or not young Australians will engage. The question is whether our democratic institutions will join them while there's still time. Thank you so much.
Politics for and by the people and other ideas to reinvigorate our democracy from Holly Rankin. Also known as musician Jack River, she's a political strategist and advisor. And that was the 2025 Speaker's Lecture at Parliament House, which Holly was invited to give on ABC Radio National's Big Ideas. I'm Natasha Mitchell, and a few notable politicians in the audience there to hear what Holly has to say. And she takes some questions from them and members of the public with the help of the Speaker of the House of Reps, Milton Dick.
I might just start with the first question regarding the bridges that you were speaking about. What does democracy look like for Marigold when she's your age and she perhaps is delivering the Speaker's Lecture? What does it look like and what do you hope it looks like?
Magnolia, but I love the name Marigold so much.
Oh, Marigold.
I do love Marigold and I would call another child Marigold.
Well, for all the Marigolds and Magnolias out there.
So, for all the Marigolds out there, oh, that's what drives me so, so directly toward this goal. I mean, I know that the world is going to look very different, but I think that the efficacy and integrity of the system's very similar to the one we have here on paper and the one we propose to commit to. I really hope that that core structure stays similar to how, like, the principles are retained. I think that the model of democracy and the ideas in democracy are inherent in humanity. They support kindness, mutual benefit, reciprocity, and most importantly, they put power in the hands of the people. And what drives me again is seeing a situation right now where if we don't make those decisions right now to put power back in the hands of people, Marigolds out there, they will not experience democracy at the rate we're going. Their lives will be controlled, tracked, and decided by corporations.
Hello.
Hello.
I'm hoping you won't mind if I deviate slightly from the substance of your speech and ask about artificial intelligence.
Yes.
And copyright. As you noted, the TDM exemption,
got it.
I always get the acronym wrong, has been taken off the table. So I'm curious what you think comes next. Are copyright laws as they exist at the moment fit for purpose in the age of artificial intelligence? And If not, what would you like to see change?
Thank you. So yeah, we're referring to text and data mining exceptions, which the proposal, for everyone's knowledge, was that the government should put a text and data mining exception in our Copyright Act for technology companies to train their models on Australian content for free. Full stop. So it's, yeah, as I said, a really important decision today. What comes next? I believe that creators and creatives and Australians should decide where and how their work is used and what they get paid for it. So those principles that I think Australians agree with across all industries and all formats are what should inform what comes next. And our Copyright Act in its current form does support those principles. We're focusing a lot on the Copyright Act. If we look at the technology companies who need that material to train their models, we should rightly ask questions about their product and their models. Is there attribution software in their platforms? Is there transparency around algorithms and the use of that content in those platforms? Right now, there's not. And this is a two-way street. If you want to use something, you need to be aware of the environment in which it's being used. Right now, we have no oversight of that, and the conversation has not been about that at all. But globally, that's what creatives, media companies are talking about, is that if we don't have attribution and transparency regulations for these corporations, then how can you know where and how your content's being used anyway, and how can you get fairly paid for it? These are purportedly the most intelligent people in the world. They should be able to design royalty backends in their platforms. They should be able to track content in their platforms. You know, solve the problem.
Helen and then Allegra.
Thank you so much, Holly. That was fantastic. I'm an MP, an independent one from the electorate of Indi in Northeast Victoria. One of the things that I've observed in my time in the Parliament is that we have this committee structure whereby we call for submissions, we ask for people from the citizenry to come to us and engage with us on ideas and on legislation. I don't see many young people when I'm sitting around that committee table, and I think that that whole process of the committee and the institution that surrounds it is something that maybe young people don't find a welcoming and a place where they would come and engage with us. Have you got any ideas about how we could do that better?
Yeah, so I agree with you. And when I engage in town halls and try to run events and get people to go to them, it's always older generations who turn up. As hard as you try. So I feel the same, and that's the question that I'm grappling with, and I think many of us in the room today are always trying to figure out. But what I'm talking about here today is that what young people mostly see of politics is question time, is interviews in the media, and, you know, attempts to communicate on social media. And I think that when the majority of parliamentarians are behaving in a certain way, and that's what you mainly see, you lose trust in everyone, even the parliamentarians who are trying very hard to reach people. And I think that's where what I'm talking about is we need the entire parliament to remember that their online communities are their constituents as well. They aren't audiences to be marketed to. And that's how I think people are thinking about them right now. And if we can make that change, and if parties and the government and parliament can understand that and support that with each other as well, then I think that will have an effect on the broad relationship between young people and politics. And that's the exact kind of line on which I am focused, to be like some kind of mediator between those worlds and look at these problems and talk about them and try to offer solutions and little glimmers of hope. But I do see it when you try to find those audiences and speak to the people they trust with messages that they understand and come to the people, the young people. It's just a really different way of communicating that I have absolutely seen it work.
I'll just go to Allegra Spender, the member for Wentworth.
Thank you for your lecture. It was wonderful. A question was really about in issues that are very contentious, the sort of the concern I've seen in my community of sort of enormous, can in some situations, real anger and sort of hostility to different people, and how we manage that sort of diversity of Australia's democracy, dealing with the tough issues but still holding on together. So I guess that's a question of how do you disagree well, how do you think about, you know, how we do that, and, you know, specifically how the Parliament can do that better, holding the country together where people do have different views on things and those views really matter to people.
Mm-hmm. There's so much I could have spoken about today. No, I get it. I'm going to answer. I think that something I could have spoken about today was the situation where we're seeing two different, very opposing marches happening on the same day in our cities, and we're seeing a lot of anger and, like, terrifying violence. And I think we have to, there's two levels of it. Number one is we really should acknowledge the elephant in the room, that algorithms are driving people into polarized positions, and that is destroying the civic fabric that generations before us had a little bit of a grasp on. And that's going to keep happening unless we step in. So when I look at those marches happening, yes, I see people who believe in something and who rightly protest, but I also see an algorithm tax on that inflammation. Though I think without civics education, without people remembering the great ideas in democracy, that it is awesome to disagree and it's exciting to have a conversation where the person next to you doesn't disagree with you, and that is human and appreciated. I think until we bring those back and remind people of that, which I totally think we are capable of doing, we don't have a playbook to have a great conversation. And finally, third part, I'm going to add a bonus part, is I think that media institutions like News Corp have very openly and intentionally made it feel like when two people in a party disagree, that equals instability. And I feel like they've driven our national political conversation into this position where we no longer see debate and deliberation made an example. We don't see our parliament make an example of healthy debate and deliberation. And again, you know, question time. It's not about debate and deliberation. And people see that, and it's so sad when I bring people or try to give them a tour of Parliament House, sit in question time, it's like, this idea is great, democracy, and it's so exciting, but you take them to question time and they walk away feeling really, really sad. And I really believe with people like Milton, who I know believe in a different way, like, that can be changed. And so I think our parliamentarians are in an incredible position, and our civic institutions like the media to lead by example and remind us of the middle ground and the principles that we apparently, you know, commit to in a democracy, and that will inspire a new conversation or a new way of conversing.
Okay, yeah. Probably only two more questions. I'm sorry, we're really short of time. So whoops. One down the back and
hello.
Gentlemen.
Hi, Holly. Hi. Amazing speech. We know that democracies, the ones that are surviving around the world, usually have strong public broadcasters. What do you think about how we can strengthen and support our we have a mainstream public broadcaster here? It is always under pressure from the government of the day. They always put their weights on what the public broadcaster should or shouldn't be doing, but we still know it is a vital part of our democracy. What would your generation like to do to keep it and to get it back to being that important plank of democracy?
Yeah, I completely agree. And again, it's unfortunate that so much doubt has been cast on that civic institution that is so important and special to our democracy. I feel like my answer is quite short in that I really hope that our public broadcaster can adapt to the new formats very, very rapidly, like yesterday, and engage younger generations in their content. You know, I have ideas about that. I've spoken to the public broadcaster about that because of my seriousness of concern that if you don't engage with a new generation like I'm talking about, then the relevance of that public broadcaster goes down and the data, the board and the government will see the data of engagement going down, which is not
And just
fun.
To remind that it's had $1 billion cut out of it in the last 10 years. So, yeah. I'm with you, but it needs funds to do that.
I completely agree. I mean, I think, I don't know, I'll try to speak for my generation in that we love and appreciate independent houses of thinking, and that's where we're running to, and that's what our public broadcaster is to the Australian people. So it really does need all the help it can get right now. And again, that will only strengthen our democracy and it will only reinforce. If we all commit to these values, we are all going to be better. And the public broadcaster is absolutely the facilitation of that conversation.
Okay, lucky last question down the front.
Hi, Daniel Dudmer from Youth Decide. Thank you so much, Holly, for that lecture. My question is about sentiment, because I feel you're in a really unique position. A lot of people of every generation who are interested in politics can get very interested and kind of tribal about it, whereas lots of other people, perhaps from the arts and culture, might switch off when politics sort of comes on. But you're kind of at the intersection of these things. So can you tell us a little about the work that sentiment's doing at that cross-section where you can engage with people who are really passionate about the arts and culture but might not think about the way politics influences their decisions every day, and how you can use arts and culture to reach people who are tuning in for like current affairs news but not more broader culture?
So after working in entertainment for over 10 years and then working inside politics and campaigning, I realised that there wasn't a team who kind of brought the best of both worlds together and was able to spot exciting opportunities to engage more people in democracy and politics. So we essentially bring together political strategy and analysis and research and I guess like information efficacy and integrity, and match that with our cultural thinkers and creative thinkers who are specialists in reaching people. So we work on what I feel are the most critical kind of narrative issues of our time. One of them is democracy. And basically, I have a lot of hope because I know that when you bring these two worlds together and bring people who understand them together, we can create solutions to those problems. And you can pretty much engage or inspire any audience if you just figure out how.
Well, that's enough for the moment, Holly, because you've given me a big spring in my step for question time today. So can't wait for that. But can you please join with me in thanking Holly Rankin?
Some homework for our politicians there. For the summer break, perhaps, folks. From 33-year-old Holly Rankin, also known by her stage name Jack River, she's a singer-songwriter, a music producer from regional New South Wales. She is also a strategist, a campaigner, and an advocate for civic engagement. And she was speaking with an audience at Parliament House in Canberra alongside the Speaker of the House, Milton Dick. And thanks to all involved with that presentation. And you can catch last year's speaker's lecture with political journalist Nikki Sava in an earlier episode of Big Ideas. Lots of interesting parallels there. And we'll link to that in our show notes for this episode. And we'd love to hear from you. Yeah, we always want to know what you're thinking about, what you're listening to on Big Ideas. And the email address is bigideas@abc.net.au. Not a hard one to forget. The show is produced by Claire Slattery, Karen Zivanovitz, and me, your host. I'm Natasha Mitchell, and thank you for your company. I'll catch you next time. Bye.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.